Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. And today I have the special privilege of interviewing IFBB professional Sarah Law. She started her competing career in 2018 at the age of 37. And it was inspired by a friend that had challenged her to compete. And I just think it's so amazing that you started your career as a master's competitor. So before I say too much about that, I kind of want to get your perspective on that whole journey. So welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Amy. I'm honored to be here with you.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here. So tell us a little bit more about I personally have been over, I've competed in the Olympia Amateur in Alicante, Spain. And
I did that one too.
Yeah. And then I also competed in Italy at the San Marino. So I know a little bit about it, but I know that it's something that U.S. competitors, it was pretty much brand new when I went to San Marino. They had just announced the split and all of that. So can you kind of give us a little bit of a background on how competing and earning your pro status in Europe is a little bit different here than here in the US?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a kind of older competitor in Europe, we actually can't gain a pro card in the Masters. So you have to compete in the Open. So what happens is you compete in height classes, and then one person from each height class will win and go through to the overall. And then it's either top one or top three, depending on the show. If it's an amateur Olympia, it's top three that earn pro status. But if it's a different one, say like a Ben Weeder, it's just the number one spot that gets the pro card. So for me, when I gained my pro status in Portugal, it was in the amateur Olympia. And so I competed in the Open because obviously I couldn't gain a pro card in Masters. And I won my height class, then went through to the overall, and then came second overall. So managed to gain my pro status that way.
That's awesome. What height class were you?
Good question. I was E, I believe.
Okay. And did you go ahead and cross over in Masters? I always wondered about that because my coach did not have me compete in Masters when I went to Italy. She was like, I just want them to see you in the Open because that's where you're going to get the pro card, you know, or whatever. I ended up being fifth. And then in Alicante, I actually did cross over into Masters. So what was your strategy with that?
I actually just did the Open. So it was in my first show ever that I did Masters and then I did the Open because it was my first show and I just wanted to get as much stage experience as I possibly could. So I did Masters first, then went on and did the Open. And that was the only time I've actually competed in Masters. Every time since then, it was just purely in the Open to go for my pro card.
Yeah. And so how many times did you do the overall? How many times did it take you to get to win that status?
So in my first show, which was August 2018, I won Masters and I came second in my height class. Then I actually went off and did another show with a different federation so I could kind of test the waters and see which was more suited to me. And after doing that, I realized that I was definitely more IFBB than anything else. I just fitted the criteria a lot better. And I just really liked the way it was all run. Like I felt it just was a different kind of class. So yeah, I came back to IFBB. I then competed again in March 2019 and I won my height class again and went through to the overall. And that one was a Ben Weeder show. So it was a top one at, well, first place basically in the overall, but gained the pro status. But I came a very close second and actually three of the judges had me down for first place. But the head judge didn't. So I missed out by like a snippet, which was like, but it was so interesting because that was actually one of the hardest preps I've ever done. I was in a really funny place. Like my body just didn't feel like it was responding. So it was a very interesting time actually, because at that point I was so ready to quit. Because it was just so hard. And then obviously when I went and won my height class and then nearly gained my pro card, it just gave me this whole new fire within my belly to just keep going and, you know that there's going to be challenges, there's going to be tough times and you just have to push through sometimes and know that sometimes actually the hardest preps are the most rewarding. So I had that show. A week later, I then flew over to Ireland to do another show. and I won my height class again. So I was in the overall again, but didn't win the overall because it was only first place that got the overall. Then I went to Alicante 5 weeks later, and that was an amateur Olympia. Again, I won my height class, was in the overall, didn't gain my pro status, and then went to Portugal, I believe it was a month later, and that was the one. That was the winning ticket.
Wow, that's quite the journey. So I think a lot of people, you know, they see the glitz, the glamour of, you know, what people look like on stage day. And can you actually tell our listeners what made that prep so hard? Just kind of, was it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting time. And I was in a great place at the end of 2018. My body was in a great place. I felt fabulous. I then went away. I had a couple of like trips planned at the beginning of January and February around that time. And whilst I was away, I think it was like severe jet lag and being up really early and training really early because I was at a conference. So I was just trying to get my training in at like 4:30 in the morning and not sleeping very well. And I think it was that actually that made it the biggest challenge because my body was just like, you know what, this is not ideal. You shouldn't be doing this when you're jet lagged. You're up at 4:30. You know, my body, my adrenal glands just did not like me very much at that point. So when I came back from that trip, it was like my body was just kind of stalling. It was like, I'm not happy. I'm not in a good place. And I'm quite good at recognizing when my body's not happy because I've had adrenal issues in the past. And that was actually one of the reasons I'd always doubted competing because I'd had adrenal issues. And I just thought to myself, what I saw when I saw competing was running yourself into the ground, low calories, huge amounts of cardio, and just feeling awful. And I was like, I can't do that to myself. But when I actually started competing, I realized that it didn't need to actually be that. You know, I know there are sometimes going to be times when you have to dig deep and push yourself, but it shouldn't be that 24/7. So it was like this whole new breath of fresh air. But around that time, it was one of those kind of dig deep moments that my body was just kind of rebelling. And actually, it was when we pulled back on training and took a step back a little bit that everything actually started to fall back into place again. Because at one point, we just kept kind of pushing my cardio up, bringing my calories down. And every time we did that, my body just rebelled. It went the complete opposite way, where it just got fluidy, it would hold on to weight, and I just felt awful. And it was just like so challenging, because I think the hardest part when you're in that situation is you feel out of control, because what you think is going to work isn't always the thing that works. You think, if I do more, I'm going to get more results, but that isn't always the case because our bodies are just so clever. So if you put your body under too much strain, it will just rebel and go the opposite way. And that's exactly what my body was doing at that point. And it wasn't until we kind of peeled things back a little bit that my body was like, oh, I can breathe a bit now. And then it kind of all started to fall into place a bit more.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So when you say that you had adrenal issues before, what were some of the telltale signs other than just feeling tired and things like that?
My weight just would not budge. No matter what we did, my weight would go up. The more we dropped my calories, the more cardio we put in, my weight would just go up. And I can feel the knock-on effect that it has on my thyroid. So I've got a slightly underactive thyroid as well. So as soon as my adrenals kind of start to go off, I can feel it in my thyroid. I can tell. And it kind of makes my moods go really funny. I get this really kind of funny feeling in my throat, like a very heavy, tight throat. And just very, I lose my personality, basically. Speak to my husband, he'll tell you. It's like I've become a different person. And it's so interesting because it is literally like, yeah, something comes over me where I just can't deal with anything. It's so interesting how stress can really impact the body. And that's why I always, you know, say to people that there's so many different layers to prep. It's not just the diet and it's not just the cardio. It's the sleep and it's the self-care and it's the mindset work. There's so many different parts to it that we need to focus on. And a lot of people just focus on the diet and the training, and they miss out the vital elements like the sleep and the mindset work and all the things that actually lead to you being an incredible competitor.
I love that. So can you give us some tips on how you, some of your self-care practices or some of the mindset work that you do?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm obsessed with it. So I'm such a big believer in having a really stellar morning routine. And I know for some people it might be quite challenging because obviously a lot of competitors have full-time jobs, so they have to be at work at a certain time. So morning time is normally when they'll go and do the cardio, so they're up really early. But I truly believe if you can just take some time in the morning to get yourself really centered and in a great place, it can make the world of difference. So for me, my morning routine it always involves some meditation. And I was one of those people, you know, years ago that just didn't get meditation. I just couldn't do it. I was like, I just can't switch my brain off. But that's actually not the point of meditation. It's physically impossible to switch your brain off. You can go without food for 3 weeks. You can go without water for 3 days, but you can't go 3 seconds without thinking. It's physically impossible. So asking your brain to stop thinking is like asking your heart to stop beating. So it's not actually about not thinking. It's just about recognizing thoughts and allowing them to pass and not clinging on to them. And what that can do is have such a profound effect on our entire nervous systems. And when we have a positive impact on our nervous systems, that can massively impact our body composition hugely. Has such a profound effect, because when our bodies are in that fight or flight stressed state, they just will go into survival mode. So meditation for me has been a total game changer in my life. And it doesn't mean that you have to sit there, you know, cross-legged for 3 hours a day. It can just be as simple as just a 5-minute morning meditation with, you know, a YouTube video or a guided one on YouTube that you can download, can just have, you know, a really big impact. So I always do that. Visualization is always a huge part of my morning routine as well. And especially when I was turning pro, every single morning after my meditation, I'd put on a bit of music that just spoke to my soul. And I would just visualize that moment of me going on stage, doing the best I physically could, feeling great, performing my routine, and just knowing that I'd done my absolute best, and then visualize me gaining my pro card. And it's so interesting because voodoo magic, it happened exactly as I'd seen it in my mind. And, you know, if you speak to any professional athlete, that's what they do. They rehearse, they mentally rehearse what they're going to do before their foot steps on stage. So if, you know, if you're a competitor that worries about your routine and messing it up, then I would highly recommend just spending 5 minutes every morning, just visualize yourself doing that routine and doing it to the best of your capability. And you'll notice such a difference when you actually do it, because your brain doesn't know the difference between what you show it in your mind or what's actually happening. So if you rehearse it before it, it will actually go and do it, which is really interesting. So I always do that. Gratitude is a huge part of my morning routine as well. So I just spend, you know, a couple of minutes thinking about or writing down some things that I'm truly grateful for in life, because when we put ourselves in that state of gratitude, then again, it can have such profound impacts on our nervous systems and how our day runs. And, you know, when we're living in a state of joy and gratitude, fear and anxiety can't exist. So those small things for me really make a big difference to how I function. And then I'm a big believer in reading personal development books as well. So my bookshelf is huge. And I've read so many different personal development books on the power of the mind and confidence and self-esteem and spirituality, you know, so many different things to really just keep educating myself, because we don't know what we don't know. There's so much out there that is unknown to all of us. And I just believe that, you know, as humans, that's what we're here to do, is just to be on this never-ending growth path. So I just think everything and everyone can teach me something. So if there's books out there that can give me a different aspect on life or a different outlook on situations and help me deal with situations better, then it can only be a good thing. So that's basically what I do every single day, every single morning. And then for me, evening times, that's definitely still something I'm working on, is the bedtime routine. It's definitely not as nailed as the morning routine. I think it's always harder, isn't it? Like the evenings, just to get off the social media, stop scrolling, and actually, you know, go and rest. So that's definitely something I'm working on. But for me, the morning routine is absolutely vital to get myself in a really good state mentally, to feel good, to get my body moving, to get, you know, blood going through my veins, and to just allow my nervous system to function in the best way that it actually can.
Yeah, it sounded like you gave a quote from The Happiness Advantage about when you have a grateful heart that there's no room for fear and anxiety. I don't know if you've read that book, but by Sean
Eagle. I haven't, but that's going on the list.
Yeah. You were just like completely, that whole book, the whole theme really reminded me of what you just said. So speaking of books and personal development, what is one of your favorites that you would recommend?
Oh my goodness. I am an absolute obsessive person with Dr. Joe Dispenza. His books are very deep, like really scientific, which is why I love it, because he talks a lot about how the mind controls the body and how the body ends up controlling the mind over time as well, if we allow it to, because we become so addicted to certain feelings that we've been thinking or feeling our entire lives. So over time, it's like our body just takes over, because we're so used to feeling a certain way that if we don't feel that way, it feels unfamiliar and scary. So we will do whatever we can to keep feeling that way. So for example, if you're someone who's always just felt unconfident or unworthy, it's so ingrained in you to feel that way that if you don't feel that way, you feel strange. So you'll subconsciously do everything you can to find ways to feel unworthy. So for me, that was a really big light bulb. I was like, oh my goodness, I've done that many, many times in my life. And he kind of then gives you some ideas and techniques about how to overcome that so you can shift those feelings and those emotions to get into a better state. So Dr. Joe Dispenza for me is an absolute guru, but I also love anything by Tony Robbins. Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins is just incredible. And again, he's so much about changing your state. He is the master of really helping you understand how no matter what happens in your life, it's only as bad as your perception of it. So of course, you know, there are things that are awful that are going to happen in life. That's just part of life, but it's not about the situation. It's about how you deal with the situation and cope with it. So he gives so many great strategies to help you change your state. And when you change your state, you change your entire life, because when you're living in a state of joy, appreciation, gratitude, excitement, fun, they're high energy. Whereas when you're living in a state of anxiety, fear, depression, they're very low energy. So you just attract more of what you don't want.
So what was the book that Dr. Joe Dispenza, what was that book called?
So Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself is one of his books, which I absolutely love. That was the first one I read. And then I also read, what was the other one called? I can't actually remember what the one's called now, but that one is absolute gold.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes if that works. If it comes back to you, we can include that. But those are great. I love those so much. So what would you say when it comes to your training style and nutrition, cardio, is there anything about that that you feel like is unique to you that you do?
Well, I'm a trained nutritionist. So for me, diet-wise, I've always been someone who wholeheartedly believes in meal plans and macro tracking. I really think it depends on the individual, because it can work both ways. And I think when you've got that knowledge of food, it serves you. So for me, because I've got such a good knowledge of food and knowing, you know, how to fuel my body in the best possible way and what nutrients I need and what things do to the body, If I macro track, I always make the best decisions. I don't, you know, I'll never just go and macro track and do if it fits your macros and eat Twinkies and candy bars. It's, you know, always that I will pick the things that I think, you know what, is this really going to serve my body and give me the best fuel to make sure that I'm filling every need, nourishing my cells, giving my body the right kinds of fuels. So that for me has been kind of a, I guess in a way, unique, because when coaches have given me meal plans, I've got a great way of knowing how to make them fun. So I'll normally stick to a lot of the things they tell me, but I'll know to add certain things in that can satisfy those cravings that we often get, because it's human nature, isn't it? You know, sometimes we fancy something sweet and sometimes we want something other than sweet potato or rice as a carb source. So I kind of know the key things that are still really prep friendly, but that you can use in a great way to make really tasty desserts and different treats and things like that. They're actually really good for the gut bacteria and stuff like that as well. So I guess that's kind of unique. And then another thing that I know about my body is that fasted cardio absolutely does not work for me, which is interesting, because, you know, I read so much on diet and nutrition and exercise, and it can become so overwhelming sometimes, because the more you know, the more confusing it gets, I think, because there's so many conflicting pieces of advice. So you'll read one thing that says fasted cardio is actually the thing to do, and then you read another piece that says fasted cardio is the worst thing you could do. And at the end of the day, it's like learning what your body needs and trusting it. And so for me, every single time I've gone and done fasted cardio, it's just put me back 10 steps because again, my adrenal glands just, they just don't like it. So I really believe in learning to listen to your own body and understanding your body as much as you can. And then really, you know, educating yourself on nutrition, become passionate about it, really learn about it so that you can make prep fun and it doesn't have to be really bland, boring food. And the more you can learn about foods, the more you can kind of concoct things that are going to serve your body and nourish it in the best possible ways.
Oh, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Sorry, it cut out just a second. Okay. So
it's not my Wi-Fi.
Oh, there we go. Now you're back. So why don't you tell our listeners where you're at right now? Because I think this is a good segue into that. You're recently moving, correct? And where are you originally from and all of that?
Yeah, so I'm originally from the UK in a place called Ely, which is near Cambridge. I've moved around a lot in my life because I used to be a professional dancer. So performing takes you here, there and everywhere. So I worked in musical theatre. So I've moved around in Europe a lot. I travelled the UK a lot performing. But when I kind of retired from my performing career, I then set up base in London for quite some time. But then myself and my husband both run online businesses and we realized that we didn't really need to be living in London. So we decided to move slightly out of London and then also live in Ibiza. And we then came back to the UK after living in Ibiza to buy a property in the UK, renovated it and then decided that actually our souls belong in Ibiza. So we have just moved back to Ibiza. We arrived on Friday. So we still have a place in the UK, but we're mainly based in a small little Spanish island called Ibiza, which is just like heaven. It's beautiful.
Awesome. So how long have you been married and what do you do for a living online?
So we have been married for 5 years in June. We actually have two wedding dates because we officially got married in the UK and then we got married in Ibiza, but it wasn't the official one because you can't officially get married here. Oh, so that was kind of like the celebration. So we have two wedding dates, which is also cool because we get to celebrate a lot more. And then what I do for a living is, like I mentioned, I'm a qualified nutritionist, but I actually mainly work, I have my own business with an online holistic health and beauty brand. So I help women basically with their health and beauty needs through supplementation and skincare and makeup. So I kind of help them know what to use to look and feel their best from the inside and out. I love to focus on skin health because I truly believe it has a really big impact on our confidence. And I actually didn't have very good skin in my teens and 20s. And it really, really did have a big impact on my self-confidence. So for me, nothing kind of pleases me more than helping other women really feel confident in their skin. And when I help women with their skin, I look at their skincare routine, I look at their makeup products and make sure they're kind of detoxing all of their products to put the best things onto their skin that are actually going to work for them without the nasties. But then also I talk to them a lot about nutrition as well and really help them get to the bottom of, you know, how can we support your skin from an internal perspective and make sure that you're aging beautifully, make sure that your skin's clear and glowing. That for me just fills my soul up. And then I also coach other women how to build a business like I have as well. So for women that are looking for kind of more flexibility in their working lives, I do a lot of coaching and help them do exactly what I've done. And for me, that's where I really get to fill a huge part of my purpose, because with the women that I coach in business, I work a lot on mindset with them, because I wholeheartedly believe that the only thing that actually really holds people back in life is what they're telling themselves in their own heads. It's their self-confidence. And when you can help someone shift those thought processes and those self-worth issues and limiting beliefs, they take better actions, which lead them toward their goals. So for me, that fills me up so much.
What would be some advice that you would give for females that are looking to become entrepreneurs or that are currently, you know, small business owners and things like that?
Ooh, good question. So for women who, I guess, are already on the kind of cusp of doing something different, I would say you've just got to take that leap of faith. Absolutely take the leap of faith and just trust and stick with it, because I think we often overestimate how much we can achieve in a year and we underestimate how much we can achieve in a longer period. So it's just being willing to stick with it and be consistent. And for me, I treat it exactly the same as competing and prep and training. You know, it's those small daily disciplines, those small daily decisions to do the grind when you feel like it or not, that make the difference. So for a lot of people who are building online businesses, especially who I work with, they're working full-time jobs as well. And so this is kind of starts as a side hustle and then over time can become a full-time career once they've built it to that point, which allows them that flexibility to work how they choose. And so what I always say to people is, you know, you need to be prepared to be that person that does the grind when everyone else has stopped. You know, you've got to find those pockets within your day to put your heart into that thing that's going to give you what you truly want in life. So if anyone's at that point and they're thinking, do you know what, I know I want change, you have to be prepared to take the blind leap of faith, but then also stick with it and do the daily disciplines. It doesn't have to be monumental, huge amounts of work. It just needs to be the daily steps. And also find someone who can help you. You know, for me, I feel truly blessed that when I started my business, I had someone mentoring me and showing me exactly what to do. So I didn't have to figure it all out on my own. I was surrounded by an incredible community of like-minded women who were all on the same path as me. And being a part of that just kept me inspired and helped me keep my vision really strong. And I just think you have to have a strong vision for what you truly want in life. So it's, again, so similar to competing. If you want to be successful as a competitor, you need to have that strong vision as to what you truly want. You know, if your goal is to go to the Olympia, you have to see it every day in your mind and feel the feeling of what it would be like to be there, because that will produce that fire within your belly to keep going when the times are tough. And as an entrepreneur, it's exactly the same. You have to have that strong, compelling vision that makes you take the daily steps that seem like they're not doing anything, but actually they're working under the surface to create those monumental shifts in your life.
So would you say you're a believer in the law of attraction?
Yes, 100%. And I was actually a huge skeptic. I can honestly say I was so skeptical about the law of attraction. And again, mainly coming from a place of, I think, low self-worth, I kind of thought it works for everyone else, but it just doesn't work for me. Like, I just can't seem to get it to work for me, but everyone else it's fine for. And that's actually one of the biggest shifts I had was when I read Dr. Joe Dispenza's books, because he takes the law of attraction and puts it into scientific terms. And for me, I'm quite a logical thinker. So when I read books like The Secret, I was like, okay, I get it, but I really don't get it, because I need to know why. You can't just say to me, if I sit and think something is going to happen, I need to know why it's going to happen. And when I read Dr. Joe Dispenza's books, he put it into really scientific, logical, factual terms that made me go, oh my goodness, now I totally get it. So yes, I am a big believer in the law of attraction, but from a very scientific point of view of, you know, you can't just sit and think things are going to happen. You have to take the action steps as well. But there is this kind of push and pull of taking the action steps, but doing them from the right place, doing them from a great energy space. Because if you do things from a good energy space, then you're vibrating at the same level of what you want, which means it's going to draw it to you. And again, I've proven it to myself so many times. You know, there's been so many times in my life when if I look back, it wasn't me working harder that made something happen. It was my mind was in a completely different place that drew it to me. And it's so interesting when you can look back at those moments and you can see, okay, there's the evidence. There is actually the evidence that it works.
So do you like put together a vision board? I know you said you do a lot of visualization.
Yeah. 100%. I love vision boards. I think they're incredible. And again, they're one of those things that just keep things in perspective and keep you focused on what you truly want. When you see something every single day, it's that fire that you need to keep you going strong, because it's too easy to quit when tough times come. It's too easy to quit when there's a challenge, or, you know, in anything in life, with competing, with everything, there's always going to be things that crop up and take your time or take your focus. But when you've got those things that you see every single day and you know what you really want to happen, it's like you look at that board and you go, okay, well, I can either decide not to take the action steps today, but is it going to move me towards that? Or I can just be a little bit uncomfortable and take the action steps and know that I've done everything within my power to make that my reality. So I truly believe that vision boards are such a great way to keep your focus. But I also do believe that they have power in another way of energetically drawing what you want to you when you take the right action steps, because it's putting you in a different energy space.
So how do you organize your action steps? So you have this huge goal, you know, and how do you kind of chunk it down and make it more, you know, realistic in the fact that you're taking small, tiny steps every day to just get that slight edge, you know, you're doing all of the little things. How do you kind of take an overwhelming goal and make it a little bit more manageable?
So for me, it's really peeling it back and thinking, what are the actual main tasks that need to be done to actually produce the result? Because what we often do as humans is we will find ways to busy ourselves with all of these things that actually don't really need to be done. And it's normally things that are within our comfort zone that we spend a lot of time doing because they're within our comfort zone. So we kind of busy ourselves and think we're doing what we need to do to get to where we want. But actually, when you really look a lot of the time at what you want to happen, a goal that you want to achieve, it's normally only a few key tasks that actually are the things that lead to the end result. So for me, it's really always about going back to the basics, keeping it simple and go, okay, what really are the main things that I need to do that are going to move me closer to that goal every single day? So I've got these kind of, I would say, daily stepping stones that are my absolute musts that has to be done, like two or three actions that I know are the daily tasks that if I do those daily, that's moving me forward. And then what I do is I look at kind of all the other stuff that could potentially have a bit of an impact, but I'm not really sure. And I'll go, okay, well, if I've got more time, then I'll schedule that in. I'm a big believer in scheduling as well. So my Google Calendar is like a school timetable. I literally schedule in everything so I know that I'm using my time to the best capabilities. What I find works really well for me as well is I often just do a brain dump onto paper of all the things that I think I need to do that are going to move me towards that goal. So I've got it all out of my head, because when it's in my head, it's just like chaos and overwhelm. I'll just brain dump it all onto paper and then I'll look at it and go, okay, what are the real things that actually are going to make the biggest difference? Pick those. And what I would say to people is don't pick too many. Just focus on two or three tasks a day. A bit like when you go to the gym, you could do 50,000 different glute exercises, but it's normally the three or four main ones that actually make the biggest difference. So it's kind of looking at it in the same context. It's the same, you know, three or four disciplines that you do daily that are probably going to be the things that make the biggest impact in you achieving the goal that you want.
What would you say were your biggest daily actions that you took in to earn pro status? What were some of the big ones?
Definitely visualization for sure. That was an absolute must, because I just knew that when I stepped onto that stage, I needed to show confidence. And I knew the more I rehearsed my routine in my head, the more I saw myself doing it well, the more likely it would happen that I would step on stage and feel confident and it would be like I'd already done it. So visualization was a huge one for me, just going over and over and over that routine in my head, seeing myself do it gracefully, feeling confident. So that was an absolute must. Of course, you know, sticking to my plans, sticking to my workout schedule. No matter what came in, I just did not miss a workout. I was like, that was a non-negotiable for me. I just decided that if I want to be pro, then I have to be prepared to do that no matter what. And for me, it was more about self-worth. I just thought to myself, if I miss a session and I don't gain my pro card, all I'll keep thinking in my head is, what if I'd have just done that session? Maybe that would have been the one thing. That could have been that slight edge, that one thing that I didn't do that made the difference. So it's for me knowing that when I stepped on that stage, I'd done everything I physically could. And if I got my pro card, great. If I didn't, I could be proud because I knew that I'd given it my all. I'd done everything I physically could. Where for me, there's nothing worse than stepping on that stage feeling, do you know what? I could have done more. I could have given it more. And I know I didn't tick all the boxes. So just sticking to my workout routine, sticking to my food plan, doing my morning visualization, they really were the key things.
Awesome. Okay. So if you have any sort of favorite exercises, or maybe based on feedback, I know a lot of your competitions, you were in the top spot. I'm not sure if they gave you feedback on certain like body parts that you needed to work. Were there some particular exercises that really were key for you in shaping your body?
Yeah, absolutely. Hip thrusts. I was not born with a butt at all. My parents are very straight up and down. So I'm naturally that way as well. I'm very straight kind of physique. I've not naturally got curves at all. So for me, building a butt was a lot of work, and especially upper glutes. And it's still something to this day that my feedback is always just need fuller glutes, just need slightly fuller glutes. I'm like, I'm working on it. I'm trying really hard. Trust me. But yeah, it's always that for me. And actually for me, I had to kind of tame my hamstrings down because I have very dominant hamstrings. And I think that's probably why I actually never had a butt, because I just used hamstrings for everything as a dancer. I think I just used my hamstrings all the time and I never used my butt muscles. So it was really kind of learning how to change that and bring my hamstrings down a little bit, get my glutes up more. So I did a lot more glute focused work and tried to do less hamstring work, which is kind of interesting because I think for a lot of females, they find it quite challenging to build their hamstrings. But for me, I've just got huge hamstrings.
Do you find that abduction work really helps that upper glute, or more just the hip thrust and the positioning there?
Yeah, I love an abductor machine for sure. So that and hip thrusts. And again, I just have to be really mindful because if I get too lean, then it's always my butt that goes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd love it to come off my waist a bit more, but it's always the butt muscles and then I get striations. So I have to get, it's a really fine balance of being lean enough, but also not so lean that the glutes start to get striated.
What are some tips that you have for making a waistline smaller?
Oh my goodness. I wish someone could give some to me. So I've tried everything. It's interesting because it's never actually been a piece of feedback that I've had from the judges. And I've never had a judge say to me, your waistline needs to come in. But for me, I just know that if I don't pose well, my waistline, it's never going to be like a 20-inch waistline. I think I've just got massive ribs. They're just in the way. So for me, I've done a lot of kind of vacuum work and making sure that, you know, I don't train my obliques too much or anything like that, just to try and keep it as small as I physically can. And then the illusion of posing. And actually with my last coach, Kim, he was like, I actually don't see any issue with your waistline at all. But if we bring your shoulders up a bit more on your lats to make you look wider at the top and then get that fullness in the glutes, then that's going to make your waist look smaller anyway. So it really is about those illusions a lot of the time. If you're not naturally, you know, built that way like me, it's knowing how to pose in the best possible way and then creating that illusion by bringing your shoulders out a bit more and bringing the lats out a bit more as well to kind of bring that taper in.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what are some shoulder and back moves that you feel like have helped your taper?
I love any kind of delt work. I just love it. Shoulders is my favorite thing to train ever. So I could train shoulders all day, every day. I literally absolutely love it. So yeah, a lot of delt work. I love a rear delt machine as well. And again, to begin with, I think I was very trap dominant. So if I went too heavy, I would always engage my traps rather than actually getting my rear delt. So it was kind of like I really had to let go of my ego a lot of the time and lift lighter to actually make sure I was using the right muscles, which can sometimes feel so counterproductive because you're like, oh, I need to be busting a real sweat in the gym and I need to be making sure that I'm throwing as heavy weights around as possible. But if you're not engaging the right muscles, there's absolutely no point. So for me, I sometimes had to really bring it down weight wise to make sure that I was actually reaching the right muscles that I needed to. And also, kind of aside from actually using those muscles and working those muscles, yoga was a really big one for me with helping with my lats and engaging my lats and helping my shoulders as well.
Oh, interesting. In what way? Just the range of motion?
Yeah, and also doing things like downward dogs. A lot of yoga is very kind of arm focused. So when you're doing downward dogs and all those movements, you're using your delts a lot and you're using your lats a lot as well. And it's very good at helping you to kind of learn how to engage the lats really well. So that really, really helped me.
Are there any other recovery type of practices that you do? Do you use a yoga wheel or a foam roller or what kind of recovery?
I should do more. I do a lot of yoga. I always have done. I love yoga. It was something, again, that to begin with, I just didn't get it. I was so used to doing high-intensity workouts that when I went to my first yoga class, I was like, I can't do this. Like, what on earth? This is too slow-paced. But actually, when I really started to understand it and practice it properly, I really got it. And it's just been so beneficial for me in every single way with my mindset, with my nervous system, but also, you know, with that flexibility that you need to be able to pose properly and to engage certain muscles. So that's been a big one for me. I really should do more foam rolling, and I've got a massage gun, but I forget to use it a lot. But having massages has been a big one for me. And also, I went through a phase of having a lot of chiropractic treatment. I had a neck injury right before my first show, and I didn't actually think I was going to get to stage because it was that bad. And so I had a lot of chiropractic treatment to sort that out. But I think that also just helped my whole nervous system, and it helped my spine become much more in alignment. And when our spines are in alignment, then, you know, our whole bodies can be much more in alignment, which can help us with lifting and moving properly as well.
Absolutely. So can you give us some advice for our masters competitors that are over 35? We tend to, you know, have different challenges when it comes to these things. And I know that you're very much in tune with great skincare and things like that. So the fact that you were able to compete in the open class and win a pro card against people that were probably 15 years younger than you, or maybe more, kind of, you know, what are some things that we can do for our skin as we age and things?
Yeah, absolutely. So, oh my goodness, I could talk about this for days. So obviously we need to think nutritionally. We need to really support our hormones, because our hormones have such a big impact on our skin health and how we age and whether we have problematic skin. Our hormones rule so much within our bodies. So we need to make sure that we're looking after our hormones, especially as we age, as much as humanly possible, because obviously as women, as we age, our hormones decline. So we need to nourish them. We need to nurture them with the best possible things we can, lots of omegas, and also really looking after our adrenal glands, saying that from experience, because as we start to age and we go through that process of the menopause, our adrenal glands can actually really help us, because they can actually produce some of our female hormones for us. But if they're in a constant state of stress, they just don't have the capacity to do that. So they'll just take over and produce cortisol, our stress hormone, rather than actually being able to produce some of our female hormones. So I think what we have to look at as older competitors is, like I mentioned, that self-care element is so unbelievably important. It more so than for younger competitors. You know what it's like when we're younger, we can get away with much more. But as we start to age, our body's like, no, I need you to really look after me now. So doing those practices like I spoke about with meditation and yoga and looking after your body in that way can really support your skin, because it can support those hormones in the best possible way. And then from an external perspective, some of the best things that you can use on your skin to make sure that you're kind of aging beautifully and glowing are stabilized vitamin C, because it's absolutely vital for collagen production. So collagen is the thing that keeps our skin young and springy. And I always say to people that collagen and elastin are the kind of fibers within our skin, and they're a bit like tent poles. So without those tent poles, you have a saggy canvas. And so we want to keep those tent poles as strong as humanly possible, which is the collagen and elastin fibers. So having stabilized vitamin C in your skincare can really support that, because it helps collagen production. You can also use supplementation that can support collagen production from the inside out. So I actually take a thing called a skin elixir, which has vitamin C and some other key ingredients that really support our body in producing its own collagen from the inside out. Also some other key ingredients. Retinols are fantastic for anti-aging. If you go to any dermatologist, they'll say that retinols are basically the gold standard in anti-aging treatments. And what they do is they help increase the skin's cell turnover rate. So as we age, we basically produce skin cells less often, which means we don't have new skin as often as we do when we're younger. So babies have new skin every like 2 weeks. And as we age, that process slows down. So we want to try and keep it, you know, as active as possible. So retinols can really help with that cell turnover rate. They're also fantastic for pigmentation and sunspots, which we start to notice a lot more as we age. But there's also a new kid on the block, which I'm a little bit obsessed with, which is called bakuchi oil. And it's a plant-based alternative to retinols. And why it's kind of unique is retinols can be fantastic, but for people who have slightly sensitive skin, they can be a no-go, because they can cause a lot of sensitivities, whereas bakuchi oil doesn't have that same problem, even though it has the same potency. And also it's a lot more stable, which means you can combine it with things like stabilized vitamin C, and it can just have a really profound effect on the skin. So they're kind of two of my key ingredients that I would recommend. And I would just say to people, you really need to think about your skincare routine. I know that sounds really obvious, but it's true. I honestly did not have a great skincare routine in my 20s and early 30s. I just kind of bought anything off the shelves thinking everything's the same. As long as it says anti-aging, it'll do the job. And it was actually when I studied as a nutritionist and I actually went to naturopathic nutrition school and I learned about ingredients. And then I started working with the company that I work with and learning all about the different ingredients and what impact they can have on the skin, but not just the skin, how certain ingredients can have a big impact on the body as well and our hormones. I was like, wow, this is really interesting. So it's really important to kind of look through your labels and ensure that what you're using is actually supporting your skin and your body, not doing the opposite. So there are lots of ingredients in skincare that can actually mimic our hormones, which is not good. You know, we don't want fake hormone mimicking things going onto and into our bodies. They can have a profound impact over time and over prolonged use if we're using lots of different things. So it's just being really mindful of things like that. And again, if anyone needs any help, they can absolutely reach out to me and I can give you some tips and pointers. I've actually got a free download as well of like a skincare guide that can help some people if they're interested in learning a little bit more about ingredients. So it's getting that combination really of the active ingredients that are going to do the job, but eliminating the things that could potentially be disrupting hormones and not allowing the skin to function as it should. Because our skin is a living, breathing organ. It's you know, a huge organ.
It's the largest one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's really great. And I'll make sure that we have exactly how to get a hold of you. And so that people that wanted to dive deeper into that and learn more about it, they absolutely can. So kind of switching gears, I put up a question of, you know, to our listeners as to what they wanted to ask you. And one of the listeners had asked what your best advice for someone is in their off season. So.
Okay, so off season is a really interesting time because it's getting that balance, I think, of giving yourself some freedom, but not going wild. And for me, actually, I actually find it harder. I find off season harder than being in prep mode, because when you're in prep mode, your eyes are on the prize. You've got the goal at the end. You know, you're fully in. Whereas when you're in off season, it's very easy to kind of let everything go to pot. So I think off season for me, the best advice I could give is treat it as a time, obviously, to relax a little, look after your body again, get it back into a really good place, nourish it in the best possible way, but allow yourself to have some fun. But always remember that you've got a goal still. So for me, I make competing a lifestyle. It's not like I'm on and off. It's like, it's just part of my life. And that's why I truly believe when you can learn about nutrition, and you can find great ways of making food fun and tasty and not feeling deprived, then it does become a lifestyle. So make sure you've got some great ingredients and some great recipes to make fun treats that are actually nourishing your soul and nourishing your body at the same time. And that makes off season so much more enjoyable, because it's like, you're actually serving your body in the best possible way, but food isn't boring. You're just getting everything that you need. So for me, it's really like, I like to say it's like an 80-20 principle. You know, 20% of the time, go out, have the wine, go and have the pizza. You know, 20% of the time you can be that, but 80% of the time still have this, you know, idea of the best possible things that are going to nourish your body. And think of it in that way. You know, all I ever think to myself is, whatever I put in my body is making up my body. It's making every single cell of my body. So I can choose to fill it with crap, or I can choose to nourish it and really honor my body and make sure that I'm giving it the best possible chance in life to be healthy and happy and give me longevity.
Awesome. Yeah, those are great. Are you still there?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. The next question is, what is your biggest challenge on prep, and then what is your favorite part of prep?
Oh, so my biggest challenge, I would say, is still, I guess, for me, trusting the process. I'm definitely someone who is a bit of a control freak. So if things don't necessarily start moving in the way that I want them to, like, you know, the scales aren't moving in the way that I want, I find it quite easy to get into a bit of a anxious state and then stop trusting. And for me, it really is about giving some of that trust over to my coach, was a big challenge for me. And my coach Kim kept saying that to me. It was like, trust me, you've got to let go, let me take the reins. And I was like, I'm really trying. But when you've got type A personality, it's really hard sometimes to just give everything to someone else. But I think it is that it's really like learning to trust your coach and learning to trust your body as well. And just know that it will all come together as it's meant to. It really will. So that was the what was the other question? I've forgotten now because I've just gone off on a random tangent.
Oh, no, you're okay. It was your favorite part of prep and then your biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. So you had kind of mentioned the challenge and then the favorite
part. So that was a challenge. And my favorite part, I think it's the day leading into show day. I love. It's the getting your tan done and all of that part, the excitement, the build up. It's a bit like Christmas. It's that Christmas Eve feeling where you know it's coming and everything suddenly feels like it's coming together and you have your tan done and all of a sudden you look 10 times better because you're brown and you get to hang out with your friends who are backstage. It's that part of it for me that is the fun part.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so another question was, what are your plans for your next show? Are you going to compete soon?
Well, good question. I actually don't have any plans right now for this year, mainly because I turned 40 on Sunday. I'm also celebrating, thank you. I'm celebrating my 5-year wedding anniversary. I'm hopefully going to be going to Maui in August. And I spent literally all of last year prepping because I was planning to come over to the States to do lots of shows, do a big run of pro shows. And obviously that didn't happen because of the climate of the world. So I was on prep from January and just kept on prep basically because we kept holding out hoping that things would kind of die down and travel would resume. Yeah. So just kept on prep. I eventually got to compete in the UK. No, actually in Alicante in October. And then I did a UK pro show in November. But because it had been such a long year where I've really not had chance to, I guess, do the normal things of life, and also because of the state of the world, I didn't get to see my family, I couldn't go out for dinners, any of that, which in a way made prep very easy because there was no way to go off plan. I was like, well, I'm just at home all the time, so it's quite simple. But it just meant that there was a year really of not being able to do the things that I love and value, which is spending time with family and friends and treating them. So I just felt like for this year I needed to get that balance back and be like, you know what, this is a year for me to spend that time with my family and with my friends and make them my number one priority rather than me being my number one priority for a while. So this year is definitely about getting that fun element back into my life, getting some balance back for a while, and then see what the next year holds. I have no idea. And I'm just going with the flow at the moment. I'm just trusting where I'm at and just trusting that when I'm meant to get back on stage, I'll get back on stage.
So if I'm hearing correctly, because I think you did your pro debut the day after you won your pro card.
I did. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Which is crazy.
So then was it a calendar year and you did the other two? Or am I counting three pro shows total?
Yeah, exactly. So I did my pro debut the day after I returned pro, which was in the July of 2019. And then I did the Alicante pro show in October of 2020 and then the UK pro show in November 2020.
Okay. And what was your feedback as a pro? Was it different than as an amateur? Did you get a chance to talk with the judges?
I did, yeah. So after my first pro show, which was the day after I turned pro, It was literally glutes again. It was like, we just need fuller glutes, just slightly. All they said to me was just a tiny bit fuller in your glutes and that's it. That's the only thing you need to do. And I was like, brilliant, that's all good, let's spend a year just working on the fullness of those glutes. And then the Alicante pro show was a really interesting show. I actually placed in the bottom five, which I wasn't expecting. I didn't by any means expect as a rookie to, place top five at all. But I was actually feeling really good going into the show and I felt like it was the best physique I'd put on stage ever. And actually looking back at the photos as well, I was much more balanced. Everything about my physique was way better than it had been when I turned pro. What was the feedback from that show was random. I think one of the bits of feedback was I just needed to put my foot in a different place in my front pose. And that was about it. They really didn't give me much else. And then from the UK pro show, it was slightly full of glutes again. That was literally it.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed something about last year. It was like the people that hung in there, it was very competitive.
Yeah,
know?
It was. It really was. And the Alicante Pro Show was really a really tough show. I mean, because all of the European competitors hadn't had chance to compete at all year. Mm-hmm. So it was literally everyone went to the Alicante Pro Show. So it was a big, big, tough show.
Yeah, definitely. So once you turn 40, do you think that you'll compete again next year, maybe? Once you've kind of...
I hope to, yeah. Yeah, I really hope to. And I'd really love to go over to the States and do some shows there and just experience that, because that was, you know, something I was so looking forward to last year. Was one of the joys of competing for me is traveling and meeting new people. And last year, I just didn't really get to do that. You know, I got to obviously the European show, but I was like, I really want to, you know, go and do a bit of a road tour of the States and see all these different places and have a lot of fun. And I wanted to go and see my coach and hang out with him. And it just didn't happen. So yeah, I really would love to still do that for sure.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I like to make my trips to Europe and compete in different countries. Yeah, so
absolutely, it's part of the fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, well, maybe that will be, you know, a 2022 thing. So, thank you so much for your time. I so appreciate it. I learned so much, and just I'm so inspired by you and everything you do and you're all about. If our listeners could get any kind of closing thoughts, if there was something that maybe I didn't ask or some tips or advice that you have before we sign off.
Okay, so I would just say, make sure that you work on your mind as much as you work on your body. That's one of the things I tell people all of the time, because we just spend so much time focusing on the physical aspect, but not the mental aspect. And the mental aspect is such a huge part of the physical aspect as well. So work on your mind as much as you work on your body, and you'll see such dramatic shifts in yourself and your confidence and your stage presence, and the way you feel about life just changes dramatically. That would be my closing thought.
I love that. I love that. So if they were to reach out to you, where can they find you?
So Instagram is always a good place to find me. So I'm at Sarah Law UK. And then in my Instagram handle, I've got a link to my website. So you can go and have a shimmy around my website and see some of the free downloads and things I've got. There's a couple of freebies on there, that one about skincare, and then one about nourishing your body. And it's got things like a tracker in there, so you can, and mindful eating tips, just to help people really think about food in a different way as well. So yeah, if you go to the link in my bio, it's in there. And then I also have a podcast that you can listen to with my husband, which is always fun.
Yeah, and you just started that, right, recently? Or
no? Yes, yeah, we started it in lockdown. So we started it around November time. We'd been planning to do it for the entire year, and then we finally got our butts in gear in November and started it then, which has been, it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yes, well, thank you for putting all that content out there and helping us and sharing with us today. So this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, signing off. Thanks for listening, guys.